Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. For more information about the news and links we talk about on the show, go to our website at www.geeksone.com.
Bow, bow. Bow, bow.
Welcome.
Welcome back, my geeklings.
Woohoo!
Did you miss us?
Are we getting a reading?
I think we are.
I think we are. We didn't do our level check today.
No. So actually, this could be, I could be yelling at people right now and not even knowing it.
Let's do our level check by introducing ourselves.
Excellent.
Excellent. Would have thought. Hi, my name is Don. I am a writer and video game professional living in Hollywood, and I am a geek.
My name is Aaron Hendricks, and I am a filmmaker and something else right here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
He's in a period of growth.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Peter Robinson, and I am a screenwriter here in Los Angeles,
and I am
a geek.
I jumped on you, Pete. I apologize.
Ah!
But Pete's not allowed to finish anything. We know that. I mean,
right, exactly. I think we should actually post a drink number for each episode. Anyway, I'm Matt King, and I am an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yes!
How was your geek month?
It was a geek month.
It's our extended hiatus.
It was a lovely family time and lots of presents and craziness and yay.
I got an Xbox 360 finally.
Yeah, but that was like 2 days ago.
It was like, like 3 days ago.
And you know what was amazing is that you got it by being on a wish list. I mean, on a waiting list, right?
Right, exactly.
Because you've been on a waiting list for months, right? And that's how you got your Xbox, right?
Wrong.
No?
I happened to be...
Wait. You've been on a waiting list for months? And for you still didn't get your Xbox through your waiting list?
For which company?
Wow. GameStop. For literally 6 or 7 months, yeah. I've been on a list, and I still have not received it.
How did you get it?
I happened to walk into a Best Buy, literally, like, in the middle of the day to pick something up, and somebody was standing there with a Xbox 360 box, like, walking out, and I was like, where did you get that? And he said, walk inside, but you have to ask the girl at this register.
And you have to show nipple.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you wouldn't have never known they had them in stock, but you had to ask for it, and the woman had like 10. Wow. And then I tried to get Peter one, and I could not convince this woman to sell me two Xbox.
If you had showed her your other nipple, what happened?
Oh, nah. I shouldn't have shown her both at the beginning.
Yeah, then
else.
You blew your wad.
Well,
that was in order to get the extra controller.
Right.
yeah, exactly.
I feel dirty now.
So nasty.
Well, the X360 is awesome. It's fantastic, the design on this.
It's very fun. Been playing.
It's very sleek. I don't like the color. It's going to get dirty really quick.
Well, whatever.
Really?
Who watches the color of their Xbox?
Okay. You're
playing the game.
I might have to get my geek car revoked for this. I've seen advertisements with different dashboards,
I guess, they have
on
different
the front
face plates.
So you can put wood ones.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
It's like those little cell phones teenage girls use now.
Yeah, they're a little snap-on.
So you're calling me a teenage girl?
If the cell phone cover fits, Matt.
Well, there's a couple cool things about your 360. Number one, I mean, a lot of people know this, but for anyone who hasn't seen it and doesn't know any of the details, the controllers are all wireless. Okay.
Cool.
They have there's a button on the Xbox in the center, which is the Xbox logo. And when you're playing with your friends, depending on which piece of the X lights up, it tells you where you are on the screen.
You know how if you split it up in quadrants,
so,
you know, if you're playing a multiplayer game?
Kind of.
Well, you've never played a split-screen four-person game?
Yeah.
So if you're in the upper left piece of the X will light up on your controller to tell you that that's where you are.
That's brilliant.
So you'll never wonder which one you've got.
Cool.
It's really nifty.
But do we have any four-player games to try out yet?
Exactly.
No, not yet. But as far as
do you have four controllers?
I have two.
So we could share.
Yeah.
Yes.
The X-Men game,
control
by the
movement,
way.
You control the fire buttons.
The X-Men game that you got me for Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm having fun with it. I'm having real fun with it.
The whole concept was for us to play it as a group.
No.
Play the whole game through and then play. That game is not backwards compatible on the Xbox 360.
That sucks. I was really looking forward to playing it with all four of us, but...
Oh, well.
So, during this week, Matt and I are working on a project for a screenplay we're talking about.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And we were doing some research. It's sort of a When Harry Met Sally type of thing. And so we were doing some research on differences between men and women and how people perceive it these days, right? So it was really interesting. We went out. We started interviewing people
on the streets.
We went
trolling Los Angeles.
And in reference to last episode, which, you know, was about geek love, mm-hmm. we had some interesting discoveries, which we thought we might just kind of share.
Okay. Know.
So do you want to start out talking about
it? Well, one, generally, it one of the first things that I realized about Americans in this, you've seen Jaywalking, where he goes and he interviews Los Angelians, and they're like the utterly dumbest people in the entire world, right? That may still be true, but every single one of these people could have a doctorate in psychology. They were geniuses about male and female relations. It was incredible. But it didn't matter.
You didn't go to a convention then.
It was unreal. But what was one of the things that women said? They kept on saying,
okay. Well, let's see.
I like a guy who's funny. It doesn't matter what he looks like.
No. Actually, the first thing that women said was, they said, we asked four questions. The first question mm-hmm. we asked was, what is the biggest psychological difference between men and women? Mm-hmm. Second question is, what is...
What do men hate the most about women? What do women hate the most about men?
Mm-hmm. And what is one secret that men and women should know about each other?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And let's see. The one secret that women said almost every time is men need to know women like sex
just as much as they do
or more than men.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they said that a lot of men think that women don't like sex as much, which... we sort of kind of sussed out is because men think women are sluts if they sleep with them on the first date.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And a man will be happy to sleep with a woman on the first date. But and a woman apparently will be happy to do the same too, except that we think they're sluts.
And does not want to be judged.
So now this is a woman's point of view thinking that they like it more than men.
That's what
– doesn't mean it's true.
Well,
from a male viewpoint – they might actually like it more than
these are the results of an informal Geeks On poll.
Yes.
Okay.
So that was one thing. I was surprised how many we heard that three or four times mm-hmm. from women.
Yeah.
The other thing is that every single time we asked a woman to talk about this stuff, without fail, every single one of them said,
This is so much fun.
Every single one of them. No man said that.
This is a great pickup line. Just pretend like you're writing a script and go and
Well, actually, we didn't tell people it was for a script. You know, we just said it was for research for a project.
Right.
You know, because in Los Angeles, you can't tell them it's for a script because it'll freak them out.
Well, they'll shut up, too, because my information's mine.
What project do they think it is? It's for.
Well, we told them it was for this. Geeks On.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
great.
Listen, let me just tell you. They were happy to talk about it when we said it was for a geek podcast. They're like, oh, whatever.
Exactly. I'm never going to. Yeah.
This will never get heard.
Yeah, exactly.
So in one ear, out the other.
The third thing that happened that was really interesting was most of the time we would start talking to a girl and we would get like a full page of like stuff.
One girl, one single girl, we asked her these four questions. We got a page and a quarter of documented stuff on each of these questions.
That was
she
great.
Was like, blah, blah, blah. Next people we interviewed were four guys. We got like an eighth of a page of information.
They had nothing to say.
They were literally like everything was monosyllabic. And it was funny because a lot of the times the difference between what they're saying is men are uncommunicative. Men are uncommunicative. Men are uncommunicative. It was really funny. And then suddenly, boom, men are uncommunicative.
Well, my observation has been if you're eloquent and speak well and pronounce your T's, then people assume you're gay.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, of course guys are monosyllabic. Oh, we don't even like sit next to each other in a movie theater because people are going to think things.
Oh, that's true.
You have to have the I'm not gay seat.
And it's the same thing with communication skills. If you are communicative, people assume you're gay.
Right.
Because that's a woman thing. Hmm. You know?
That's very interesting.
Hmm. And it, you know, it's interesting because out of the people we talked to, the one guy that was very communicative more so than the girls was an actor.
Yeah.
So
gay.
You know.
All right. That, you know, we should move to some news.
Let's do some geek news.
But hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on. I want to interject one more geek thing that I did over the past week
or month,
which was I got to go to the premiere of Blood Rain last night.
Oh, you did?
Last night?
Really?
Well, it was a premiere of Blood Rain. Blood Rain, Brain Rud, blah, blah, blah.
So how does rest of the podcast will be on Blah?
Isn't that Uwe Boll's
Uwe Boll starring Uwe Kirst in Hungary and Ben Kingsley and the chick from Terminator and
all slopped together in one gooey.
Billy Zane.
One nice
who
blush.
Is the chick from Terminator
Billy Zane's
playing?
In it? Billy Zane has two short brief cameos.
I love Billy Zane.
That were brilliant. Okay? Now, I mean, imagine this movie as being an enormous wad of shit sitting there steaming, smelling the place up.
Was this your review?
With two little diamonds into it.
Is there corn? Like snowman eyes.
And like snowman eyes. Those would be Billy Zane's performances. There's no continuity between his two performances, as my friend pointed out on the
way home. So it's actually like a diamond and an emerald.
Yeah, there you go. Well, no, because they're both really good, but the character isn't the same between his two scenes. In one, he's kind of skittish and not surprisable. In the next one, he's completely blasé about everything. But
I love Billy Zane.
It was so clear that he's just like, whatever, let's just do this. I'm having a good time.
That's great.
And he really enjoyed his scenes.
So it's a big pile.
It is a big pile.
With
but,
two diamonds.
But I will say, if you go there with – like I went there with my friend TJ who did some of the action stuff for the movie.
Oh, really?
The fight choreography and has a little role in the movie. If you go see the movie, the guy who is Blood Rain's circus handler is TJ, my friend TJ.
Blood Rain's circus handler.
Blood Rain's circus handler. That's
okay.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, that's pretty much the first act. Well,
she's a trapeze artist.
If you go with the right group, like I did, it is possible to have a really good time. But you will like this is actually the first movie where I did throw something at the screen. I have never done that in my life.
Was this a cast and crew screening too?
No, it was just TJ. It was the first night it's showing in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
So that's how it was our premiere. And, you know, it was playing in the only theater in Los Angeles it's playing in to a 22% sold-out audience. Yeah. So if you're interested in seeing a really bad movie, and I suggest sneaking alcohol in, Blood Rain is a way to go. It is so over-the-top bad. Wow. Filled with lines such as, you know, I am a vampire, but I do not want to hurt you. I just want to kill other vampires.
See, wait a minute. You give it the stink review, but fun. But Underworld, which I thought was an average to even slightly decent, you give a crap.
Because Blood Rain was so bad that there was no pretension to it.
Right.
Underworld is a pretender to being a good movie. Do you get the difference?
You're just saying it's so bad that why even worry about it?
Yeah,
I understand exactly.
It's
what,
so that point.
I understand exactly what Don's saying.
He's saying it's Mystery Science Theater good.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's steaming pile. Do not go alone. Okay. Go with friends willing to throw things to the screen with you.
Right. And if you go, you want to go in South Central Los Angeles.
As opposed to Star Wars, which should be a good movie, and yet isn't.
And pretended to be. You know, if there's a certain degree of pretentiousness to it, I expect you to hold up to that.
Right.
You know, I saw the trailers for the new Underworld. It looks more promising than the last one. You know, the last one, I walked into that movie wanting to like that movie and giving it every shot.
I think that was more of the problem.
And they insulted me every single chance they got.
I didn't think it was as bad.
Yeah, but see, that's the problem.
Some of the crap vampire movies that you enjoy, I'm shocked that you didn't think that Underworld isn't the godfather of vampire movies. Because you like some crappy vampire movies.
Oh, name some crappy vampire movies that I like.
I can't even come up with...
Wait. John Carpenter's The Vampires, the second one?
Los Vampiros. Have any of you seen it yet on my suggestion?
No, but I saw the first one.
And have I suggested the first one?
Just the second one.
All right.
Don specific.
Weren't you like a Bordello of Blood fan too or something?
Okay, you caught me on that one.
Gosh.
All right, all
right. She's in a cheerleader costume.
All right, let's do some news.
News, news, news.
She kills people with her tongue.
Jeez. Hit it, Don.
No, Matt. After you. You're the one with 17
I'll do it.
Stories.
Okay, Peter, go.
Okay. So I have a story about red rain in India. A rain of blood in India.
Oh, God. We're all going to die.
That scientists, some scientists published a paper recently saying that they think it's actually caused by alien microbes from a comet that crashed just hours before the rain started.
What?
Okay. Now, a lot of scientists are kind of going, a lot of scientists are saying, you know, they think this is complete bullshit, but there's some scientists
and
going.
And in a lot, you mean 99.9%?
Well, I don't know. They don't say in the article. But there are some scientists are going, you know, there's actually a lot of
empirical evidence?
Yeah, this, concept
the,
behind
the
this.
The tobacco industry scientists. They're the ones like, it could be alien microbes.
Actually, this would fit with a long-standing theory called panspermia. Yes, that is the name of it, panspermia.
I think I saw that video.
Yes, which holds that life forms could travel around the universe inside comets and meteors.
Right.
Okay, so it is a theory
that
has a lot of validity in the scientific community.
Give them pop shots whenever they can.
Basically...
It's a scientific money shot.
Scientific money shot.
The story of the specs began on July 25th. Okay.
You broke Matt.
We're just going to... Let's all watch Matt for a second as he tries to get his shit together.
Wait, what happened?
Never actually seen him turn red while he's laughing.
No, that's the alcohol
God,
he had before
turning
he showed
into
up.
Beat Boy.
Wow. Panspermia.
You never turn red.
What happened on January?
So basically this started on July 25th, 2001, when residents of Kerala, a state in southwestern India, started seeing scarlet rain in some areas. Experts at first said that the most likely reason was presence of dust in the atmosphere, which colors the water. Hmm. But then when they started to investigate more, they realized that the particles have a similarity with biological cells, although they are devoid of DNA. And you can see...
It's got little organelles and stuff in
there. That's what it looks
there.
Like, yes. The stuff in the inside. You guys see that?
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, right? So as they started to investigate this, they tried to figure out what else could have dropped what they estimate to be 55 tons of particles that fell from the sky in different areas. And it was not everywhere. It was in isolated pockets.
Right.
Okay. So basically what they
– Weather balloon.
I'm sorry, what?
Weather balloon.
Yeah, right.
Swamp gas.
Little tiny microscopic weather balloons permeating the rain.
What they propose is that basically a couple of hours early that morning, there was a meteor that they saw that went through the area, and they think that if it was a meteor coming in at a low trajectory, that it would have broken up as it came across India and left bits of it in the air.
Wait a second, are you proposing kryptonite?
Yes. Yeah. Except
and
that
Superman
this is a lot.
Crash somewhere.
Yeah.
Superman's going to be Indian.
Superman's going to be Indian.
Actually, you know,
up, but no way.
There is
racist
actually,
joke in 5, 4, 3,
2.
Why is that racist?
So
nothing racist about that.
Yeah. So
would you like a slushie with your rescue?
Now that's kind of racist.
It's not even kind of racist. It just
we have another racial group down. Thank you very much.
So even after storage in the original rainwater at room temperature without any preservative for about 4 years, no decay or discoloration of the particles could be found. So this was very—it's just a very interesting little story. So we'll have to wait and see.
So they're still alive?
Well, no, they're
intact.
Well, they have no DNA.
Not,
I mean, there's nothing
falling apart.
They appear to be organic, but not necessarily alive.
Yes, exactly.
Well, just because you don't have DNA doesn't mean that you're not alive.
Well, you need
some Cylon hater.
Well, they. Yeah,
there could be life forms somewhere in the universe without DNA.
These particles don't have emotion, Aaron. They only simulate it.
All right. That is interesting.
All right.
Yeah.
I would love to hear
what happens
with that one.
All right.
Yeah,
I'm going to follow up the panspermia. A hero cat apparently dialed 911.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw this on the news.
This happens all the time.
Columbus, Ohio. Police aren't sure how to explain it. an officer walked into an apartment Thursday to answer a 911 call, and an orange and tan striped cat was lying by the telephone on a living room floor. Its owner, Gary Rochesine, was on the ground near the bed having fallen out of his wheelchair. Now, the guy says the cat probably hit 911. He did not hit 911. The cat did knock the phone off, and he had trained the cat to dial 911.
It's like a speed dial button, right?
There is a speed dial button, but he also trained the cat to lick, specifically lick 911 in the case of specific circumstances. Now, the funny thing is that this guy refused to wear his medic alert bracelet and refused to have, what is it? There's a service that basically when you fall out of your wheelchair, it notifies you immediately. Yeah. But rather trained his cat to dial 911.
It's too much of a pain in the ass to wear the bracelet. So he's going to spend 15 years training his cat to dial 911.
Wow. Let me ask you a question. Is this guy, how paralyzed is he?
Rochesine, he couldn't get up because of pain from osteoporosis and mini strokes that disrupt his balance.
But he couldn't drag himself to a phone?
No.
Do we believe this? Because I saw the guy. He looked like, he didn't look like he couldn't drag himself.
Well, he wasn't wearing his medical necklace, and he couldn't reach a cord above his pillow, and he was incapacitated enough at the scene.
Believe it or not.
That's my Jack Palance.
I believe it.
But didn't work. Okay, no.
Maybe he's in India, and these strange particles actually managed to possess his cat.
Could very well be.
Can I actually mention just a side? You know they did an Indian Spider-Man, right?
Yeah.
They saw a comic. They did an Indian Spider-Man.
Really?
Spider-Man?
It didn't look that good, but they did.
No.
Wait, it was a comic?
Yeah.
Huh, really?
Interesting. Yeah. What's Peter Parker's
name? Reminds me of that launch of Arabic comic books, like the Arabian comic books. Mm-hmm. I'm really curious to see whatever became of that.
Which one? Simpsons, where Homer likes cock?
Actually, there's probably a lot of comic
moving on.
Cock is the
donuts.
The donuts. Yeah, they're the right.
I don't think it's pronounced that way.
Cock.
All right, Don.
No one dressed that way should say that this week.
Okay. Don, your turn.
I can't. I'm broken now. All right, Gates unveils his urge.
Excellent.
Have you guys heard about this?
No.
Bill Gates claims to take over your... excuse me. Let's try that again, shall we? Bill Gates aims to take over your living room. Late Wednesday, he unveiled a new music service and new software to do it.
He's not claiming to take over your living room. This living room is mine.
All your real estate will belong to us. He is launching a new subscription music service called Urge that will not support iPod.
That's their downfall right there.
Yep. 2 million tracks for purchase, as well as an all-you-can-eat subscription, which iPod does not have. So pay a flat rate. You can download as much music as you want.
Not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
They can't shift people that much off.
He's come up with an agreement with DirecTV and its British counterpart, BSkyB, allowing consumers to get DirecTV video on a Windows Media Center PC as well as its gaming console, the Xbox 360. So all of us here in the States who are curious to see Doctor Who... which we have not been able to see at the new version. This may be your only chance.
Cool.
See, the problem with these all-you-can-eat subscription fees is that usually the music is unlistenable once you stop paying the all-you-can-eat subscription.
Yeah, that's
so
the way it works.
You pay a licensing fee for the year. You can download all you want, but the instant you stop paying the licensing fee, you can't play the music. And that... Like, let's say you start buying music, and like 5 years down the line, you decide you don't want that service anymore. All of the music that you have in your library and all your playlists and all that, gone.
Yeah.
Now, unless, and you probably are able to do this, you can probably burn it to a CD.
Is that the same thing
that
iTunes?
What happened with Napster?
No.
Was you could download your music and then burn it to a CD once.
Well, that's all you need. Because then you can start making MP3s from it.
Well, it was kind of weird. No, because there was some sort of protection on there where you couldn't crack it. You couldn't burn it from the CD back to your computer.
Right. Wow. They may have tried that. Yeah. But yeah, that's what – you can do that with Apple. Like, Apple has the rights protected. Yeah, the rights protected. So you can put on 5 computers that are registered to that piece of music. And once you
get beyond that, that music won't play. For example, you can hook an iPod up to the Xbox 360 and stream music from the iPod. So if you're playing your racing game, you can select the playlist you want and race to your music.
Oh, that's cool.
Problem is it doesn't play the rights protected music that you've downloaded from iTunes. So if half your music has been bought through iTunes, it no worky on 360.
That sucks. But yeah, not tying it in with iPod just seems like a ridiculously bad idea.
That's really bad because iPod's like 80% of the market here in the United States or something crazy like that.
Trying to undercut them again.
I'd actually expect higher.
All right, I have a linked news here about the Xbox 360 and media. Apparently, after not installing a HD hard drive, or sorry, HD disk drive in the 360 high def, Bill Gates announced, but the reason, by the way, that Bill Gates is announcing all this stuff is CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, is going on right now.
Right.
So there's all sorts of crazy announcements on gadgets. But he announced that the Xbox 360 will be receiving an external high def DVD drive. Not Blu-ray, it's the HD DVD format. So if you would like to watch movies through your Xbox 360, you'll be able to buy this thing, hook it up to your 360.
Well, just high def movies, right? Like you can already play normal DVDs on your Xbox.
You can already, yes, you can. Okay. An Xbox 360 is a DVD player as well, but it does not play high def DVDs. So one of the reasons why they didn't put one in there is because the format hadn't been solidified. Two, it drove the price of the box up. And three, there's not enough people that have high-def televisions right now.
Right.
And there's no movies. Right. Zero movies. So they thought it might be jumping the gun. Well, here we are making the announcement that it's probably going to show up as an external drive.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. I think an external one is probably a better idea.
We'll see if they can match the software to it. Who knows?
Okay, so my next article is about data mining 101. Basically, we've all heard about Bush's executive order allowing eavesdropping without warrants.
Right.
Okay. And it's been acknowledged, according to the Times, that NSA technicians combed over large amounts of phone and internet traffic, seeking patterns pointing to terrorism suspects. Some officials described the program as a large data mining operation, the Times said, and described it as much larger than the White House has acknowledged.
Right.
Okay, so that's background information for this.
Okay.
So there was this guy who decided that he would want to see what you could find even if you didn't have the NSA's resources.
Right.
Okay. So what he did was he went out and he decided he was going to start by looking for subversives on Amazon. And what he did is he said, everyone, you know, we all have Amazon wish lists of books that we want.
Yeah.
And Amazon wish lists are easy to look at. They're open to anyone.
Right.
Sure. So he just picked a random person's name and he searched Amazon wish lists for certain books. So, for example, if you search for people named Mark, he got 124,000 responses. And then he went in and inside that...
Well, that's because Amazon has those people who liked this book also liked, right?
Well, it's because in your wish list, you can search for someone's name in a wish list.
Right.
So it just got check so Mark,
he
something
just searched,
Mark, something Mark.
For example,
something.
He would search within Mark for wish lists.
Right.
Okay. And then he would search within that for different books. And he picked books like Slaughterhouse-Five, by Kurt Vonnegut, the classic anti-war novel. You know, he would search for things like Michael Moore. People who are reading Michael Moore are probably fringe left, Rush Limbaugh fringe right. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to see what you could find out about people from just these wish lists. And basically, within this, you know, once he was able to kind of weed down to certain people in certain groups, he was also able a lot of times to find out their shipping addresses, not their actual addresses, but the town that they're in. Okay. So now he was able to figure out what town they were in, but he had their whole name too, based on the Amazon wish list. So then he was able, in many cases, to find out where they lived by just going to Google and searching for their
full name with their town
and their addresses. So literally, you know, he said he was even tempted, for the purposes of his article, to then post satellite images of these people's homes, but he decided that was probably going a little too far. But it was amazing.
Yeah, because just Google Earth it. Boom.
Yep.
You've got his.
Yeah. So, for example, here are the readers of 1984 with the name of whatever he was serving.
Yeah. Wow.
So he's got a Frapper page that's got like
pins
of people with the name Mark, you know, who had 1984. So I just thought that this was really, really interesting.
Now, actually, there was an article which I did not bring in today, but which had said that a lot of government websites were in a big hubbub because they were leaving cookies on your computer that was sending personal information back to the government website if you had accessed CIA, NSA, FBI, any one of those websites.
It didn't matter.
Spyware. It didn't, yeah, complete spyware, but it was sending all your information back to the government. When they found out.
Buy a Mac.
Right. When they found out that this was going on, they were like, oh, we thought those would, like, time out after 2 days, and we didn't realize they had a time set for 16 years on your computer.
Wow. Those are World of Warcraft.
Yeah, exactly.
Spy bot.
But if everybody bought Mac, wouldn't they just make them for Macs?
Yes.
The reason why they're not out for Macs is because nobody worth spying on owns a Mac.
True. There are things in the Mac operating system that makes it a lot harder for that. But yes, in general, you're right. The reason why there aren't the spyware and viruses aren't rampant in the Mac world is because most people buy a PC. That's why I'm saying buy a Mac, because you'll be one of the few.
You want viruses?
The few, the proud.
No, because you won't get viruses.
If enough people go out and buy Macs, you'll have
they
viruses
won't, it's
too.
Never going to happen.
You should want to hold on to your
I'm
minority.
Talking about the geeks who are going to rule the world, our listeners.
Well, right. You know, I've always wondered
our listeners
this.
Like video games too much to buy Macs.
We few, that's we true. Happy few.
I've always wondered this because it is a big debate. You know, is it in fact that no fewer people have Macs and that's why there's no viruses, or is it also that it's a more stable operating system?
It's a more secure operating system.
More secure,
and mainly just because it's a newer operating system.
But that's
right.
That's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a more secure system because there are no viruses for it.
No. Because if it's a newer, when like for example, when Vista comes out, whenever it comes out this coming up year, it will have certain things in place that make it harder for those type of things.
Right, but if
it
the
is
hackers,
my belief that will last about 15 minutes.
You're right. No, you're right.
Because 95% of the public's on that, and the hackers want to hit 95%, not 5.
Right. No, you're right. No, that's,
your biggest security is the fact that there aren't enough of you to attack.
Right. That's true.
Exactly.
That's true.
All right.
So buy a Mac.
To follow up on Peter's article there, Walmart, you know, they have a Walmart site that's just like the Amazon site where you can go and you can buy books and DVDs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it also leaves a little list afterwards that says, if you liked this product, then you'll also like these.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Walmart basically had a product listing on Walmart's website for the Planet of the Apes DVD.
Oh, God. I saw
this. Oh, yeah. I saw this.
And they suggested films. If you liked Planet of the Apes, then you'd like Dorothy Dandridge and Martin Luther King and all of the things about black people. It was basically, they're listed as similar items to Planet of the Apes.
I don't know how.
Well, they didn't know whether or not it was a metadata anomaly, which basically meant that they were treating... in the biggest ironic thing in the history of the world...
So Peter's cell phone just rang.
Yep.
The immortal words of Margaret Cho, when we hear that theme, Matt and I know we're in trouble.
Yes, exactly. When you hear the gong.
Only slightly better than a gong.
God.
Right, exactly.
Perfect
anyway,
timing.
So they think that Planet of the Apes might be a race thing, so maybe it extrapolated out to race for if you like these like items, but who knows.
Someone meta-tagged The Planet of the Apes as a race relation movie?
Yeah, they don't know. But they think, or it might be, you know, a lesson.
Or maybe they say a race of apes who, you know, maybe it's in the description or something. Yeah. And, oh, man.
Walmart comment, however, was, we are heartsick that this has happened and are currently doing everything possibly to correct the problem. Walmart.com's item mapping process does not work correctly and at this point is mapping seemingly random combinations of titles. We were horrified to discover that some hurtful and offensive combinations are being mapped together.
Wow.
Yeah. But there's the links on the website
just
so that you can see, like...
Wow.
heads will roll.
Damn. Well, and they're also the unfortunately they also the album Yellow Submarine and all of Bruce Lee's movies also got tagged. <tattooed. laughs>
So, wow.
Anyway. Anybody else got some?
Cue Peter's phone.
Exactly. Well, in my news story, I guess it's appropriate that it's me bringing this one in. An Italian judge has ordered a priest to appear in court this month to prove that Jesus Christ existed.
Really?
Yeah, I read this too.
Yep. The case against Father Enrico, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Righi, has been brought in the town of Viterbo, north of Rome, by Luigi Cascioli, a retired agronomist who once studied for the priesthood but later became a militant atheist. Apparently,
he got hit by a priest or something and turned.
Apparently, Senior Cascioli wrote a book called The Fable of Christ and began legal proceedings against Father Righi 3 years ago after the priest denounced Senior Cascioli in the parish newsletter for questioning Christ's historical existence.
Wow.
So it's a slander case.
So now he has to prove.
His book says Christ never existed. The priest basically said, you're a moron for thinking that. He said, prove it. And the judge did not want to take the case, but the appeals courts of Italy has forced that judge to take the case.
Very interesting.
Ugh.
There's a new book
well, wait
a minute. That I wanted
this
to
guy's
read.
Guy's doomed. Okay. I mean, I think most people at least believe that Jesus existed.
Yeah.
So I think this guy is kind of in trouble.
Whether you believe or not, I mean, like, even the Jewish faith, like, organized Jewish religion believes absolutely. Yeah, he was there.
Right. You know? So like, whether, well, you know,
I mean, listen, you know, in court, you can't just go on what you believe. You know, they're going to start to present facts and evidence. And,
no, I think there's a, you know, I mean, I think, well, it's hard to, you know, it's a historical records, no matter what. I mean, what facts you're going to bring up. But,
right.
You know, I think of most...
Well, apparently, Signor Cascioli maintains that early Christian writers confused Jesus with John of Gamala, an anti-Roman Jewish insurgent in first century Palestine. Church authorities were therefore guilty of substitution of persons.
Interesting.
Is his accusation.
Very interesting.
And the...
out of all places...
There's a list of evidence here to support Jesus' existence... And it's
there's
on the
a
news
book
site.
That I'm reading right now that I want you to check out, Don. It's called Misquoting Jesus. It's very, very interesting.
I think I read a website dedicated to that book.
It's very interesting. Yeah. It's all about the scribes and how the scribes would be like, well, this doesn't say it the way I want it to say it, so they'd change it.
Well, right? It was interesting. So. We have a Geeks On listener, Doulos, who is a biblical scholar.
Very erudite.
And in seminary right
and
now.
And a biblical... Well, no, he's a graduate.
Oh, he is. Oh,
I believe he's a graduate. I might be getting my facts wrong. But I believe, and I don't mean to be putting words in your mouth, Doulos, if you're listening, he is a literalist when it comes to the Bible.
Right.
He absolutely believes literally what the Bible says.
Okay. The King James Version or just scriptures in general? I guess we should ask him, huh?
I stare at you blankly. Okay, now there is a reason why I brought that up, and now I'm just completely...
The scribes?
Oh, yeah. We had a brief discussion where he sent back several translations to me of what these words meant. And I'm looking at his translations, and I'm looking at the translations from other scholars. And his match some scholars, but not the other half. So it's interesting. Like, they're both... There's so much contradiction out there.
Yeah. Well,
so much contradiction. And everyone has the paperwork to show that they're right.
You know? The... Let him who is without stones, let him who is without sin cast the first stone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very famous parable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the original Bible. It was written into the margin by one of the scribes. And then later, it was never in any one of the Greek original Bibles. It was not.
No scripture.
It's very interesting. It's basically that this guy had said, oh, I've heard of this story in relation to the scripture that was there. And the next scribe that picked it up thought it was... You know, oh, I need to put that in.
Good story.
Very interesting.
Good writer.
Mm.
Should write for Hollywood.
Check it out. It's an amazing book.
I don't know, though, how I feel about any legal system having to determine whether or not someone's deity exists. You know?
True. Well, again, they're only proving whether the man exists or not. And even that's hard. I mean, how are you supposed to prove Ben Franklin existed?
We have paintings. And some kite string with some charred DNA on it.
Exactly. All right. I have, this is not news, but this is very interesting. A guy, or a website, Kaniva. It's almost, it's a, like a media distribution website in a way.
Eva Kaniva?
Yes, Kaniva. But they have this piece of software that allows you to make video games.
I'm sorry, I have to do this. Kaniva! Okay, continue.
They have a piece of software that allows you to make video games, kind of like that first-person shooter video game software that you had, that you brought up.
Somewhere. Right.
This allows you to do the same type of thing. I think it even has a 3D program involved. But it allows you to build massively multiplayer online games. Ooh. It even will host, makes client engines for you, artificial intelligence servers, persistent world
creation. It will look just as bad as Asheron's Call.
Asheron's Call, I think, is done now.
Good.
I thought they came out with a new one.
Yeah, they came out with Asheron's Call 2.
It looks so bad. Whatever I picked
up. It's 10 years old!
No. I think it was the new one that I picked up. It was like all new characters. It's so bad.
But anyway, this whole thing, they've got CGI scripting, C++ scripting, if you actually want to dig even deeper.
Wow.
Sound management systems, all this stuff, so you can make your own persistent world and have people come on, and even they collect money for you and everything. So we'll put a link on our website for that. That's pretty cool.
You got one, Pete?
I haven't.
I'm done. Okay, because I got a good follow-up to that, just real quick. Julian Dibble has an interesting piece in the January-February issue of Legal Affairs where he explores the idea of whether or not trading of virtual goods in a massively multiplayer online role-playing game could constitute an income-generating and therefore taxable exchange under the IRS rules of barter.
Wow.
So is the IRS going to tax your World of Warcraft booty? Well, this may sound ridiculous on the face of it, but because virtual world goods now have a real world market value, there is a legal argument.
Oh, God.
Albeit an unsettling one for anybody
who plays
online multiplayer
games. The IRS is going to sell me World of Warcraft gold.
Right.
As long as they only tax us in World of Warcraft gold, that's fine.
Right. The good news is that when he pursued the question with IRS officials, they cocked their heads to the side like dogs hearing a high-pitched noise.
What? World of Warcraft.
So don't expect to see any 1099 form shipping with
that
your
would
next
be great.
World of Warcraft.
I would totally do that. If they tax my World of Warcraft gold, I would give them the rest of my gold to pay off my taxes. I would totally do that. I would spend every day running running some very high-end instances that give you gold in order just to pay them off in virtual gold. That would be awesome. I'm sorry. I'm a little short this year, but I have a Widowmaker. It's a blue.
I've brought this up before, but there's a man here in Los Angeles who's an artist, and his art that he does is he makes fake money. He makes like bills of, you know, they're not real countries.
But
not
he's
any,
not a counterfeiter.
No, because he's not making.
Because it doesn't look like American.
It's not American money. He just makes this artwork that looks like money, and then he'll put like a hundred on it or a 50 on it. And then what he does is he doesn't sell his art. He trades it for other things. So. If he's famous now, so some people might say, I'll trade you a new car for that 50, you know, unit piece of artwork that you have. And he'll say, okay. And part of the art is proving that he can make his own monetary system and buy things with it. It's part of the shtick of his art.
Very interesting.
And he does it. He does very well.
Did you see in the news this week? There was an auction, I forget if it was on eBay or an actual auction house, of a dollar bill that had been printed by the United States government where a Chiquita banana sticker had made it onto the paper pre-printing.
Oh, really?
So the ink for the serial number had gone over the Chiquita banana sticker.
So it's legal tender.
It is legal tender, as long as it still has the Chiquita banana sticker on it.
Right.
Take it off, no more. And they're saying it's going to go for a lot of money, apparently.
That's crazy.
Did you see they sold Metallica's integrity on eBay?
All right.
Metallica sold it?
No. Somebody sold Metallica's integrity. It sold for $5 million before eBay pulled it due to the fact that they've decided to put a kibosh on intangibles.
That is hilarious.
Wait a minute. You can't buy somebody's virginity anymore?
I don't know what they're doing. But
so intangibles are gone.
I was watching Memoirs of a Geisha a couple weeks back. And I was wondering, if you were a modern geisha, could you sell your the Mitsurugi?
Not the Mitsurugi.
But
your virginity?
Basically your geisha virginity online, if you were a modern geisha.
It's done geisha. It. eBay's had it several times.
Like prostitutes selling themselves? Or
no, like virginity? a guy, mostly been guys, saying, I am a virgin, I'm selling my virginity. For, you know, starting bid
$100. But you're selling sex. Isn't that illegal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but still, you know, they were selling organs on eBay a couple years back, too. Yeah, like livers and stuff. Okay. I think we should move on to our topic. Okay. Our topic this week, something that I don't know why in the world I thought of this. It just came up. I think it's because of the Christmas present that I will talk about a little bit later. But I had a question, and since I'm not a big comic book reader, I'll throw this out to you guys. But I was wondering if you guys thought that superheroes were vigilantes, and if you think that they have a moral right or even legal rights to do what they do.
Well, it's an interesting issue because it's not one that's ignored in the comic book.
It isn't, because that's another thing I was wondering. I mean, does Superman ever get in trouble for running around and essentially acting like a police officer?
Superman does not.
No, because that's outside of his storyline.
Right? And I think it would be dumb.
Yeah, and Superman is the Boy Scout. You know, he mm-hmm. does nothing wrong. He never kills anyone.
He doesn't hurt anyone.
He's
never crossed the line.
A Superman day is like swooping down and saving people from a collapsing bridge.
But no, he goes after bad guys, doesn't he?
Oh, he does. Don't get me wrong. But his storylines tend to be more about saving people
in immediate trouble.
Yeah, and rather than undoing someone else.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see Superman bitch slap a mugger so much. You know, that's
but he'll go after.
Man,
but he'll go after a bad guy, which is a police. Usually,
yeah, he always brings them to justice.
But because Superman has such a, he's so powerful, he uses the most restrained amount of force necessary to capture someone.
Yeah.
If there's a mugger, Superman just grabs him, and the mugger can hit him all he wants. You know, Superman doesn't do anything to the guy.
True, but that. I mean, doesn't mean you have the right to
do that. DC Comics specifically steps around that a lot. Superman is almost seen as, America. He works for the United Nations. You know, he's, yay, he is the he is the man.
Is he licensed by any point now?
I don't know.
I know he's worked for the United Nations and they've sent him on missions.
Oh, really?
But I didn't know that.
For example, in the Wonder Woman series, I'm not sure if it's still in the same continuity anymore, but she was a formal diplomat from the island nation of Themyscira, mm-hmm. the Amazon nation. She had full diplomatic immunity when traveling around.
So she could go and do whatever she wanted to, and they...
Absolutely.
A superhero with diplomatic immunity.
Because she was a diplomat. She was an envoy from her nation to the world of man.
Right.
I did not know that either.
Well, it was a fun little storyline. But so DC tends to find ways to step around it. They have more licensed superheroes than Marvel does.
Right.
With Superman, I get
government
it
groups like Checkmate.
Right.
And
so they're kind of... You quoted Checkmate.
Well,
that's what I was wondering. Is like, have any of these people been like deputized?
Yes.
Like they. So yes. Some of
that
these
is Checkmate. The entire series of Checkmate was about supervillains who had been captured, put in prison, and then forced to work for the government to get free.
Interesting. You know?
Or was that Checkmate?
No, that was not Checkmate.
Checkmate was the other one. What was the...
Checkmate was the knights
of?
Who were in black and gold, and...
Who am I thinking of? But yes, that exists in the DC universe.
Okay.
Marvel...
Marvel's a lot shadier.
Well, the whole idea with Marvel is their big cause for superheroes is genetic mutation, right? You're born with it. It's just a part of you.
So okay. It's a race
and then there's
issue
a
too.
Big, yeah, it's always a race issue, but there's a big movement in the Marvel Universe to register mutants.
Right.
And a la the
X-Men.
Well, a la the Nazis.
You know. Oh, okay.
Yeah, register your Jews, you know.
So
act with your mutant powers mm-hmm. without a license is supposed to be kind of it's a gray area for Marvel.
So is a universe. License in that universe just registering that you have powers, or does that give you some type of legal law enforcement power?
It actually takes away.
So your are legal the heroes rights. In the Marvel universe? Does society look at them as vigilantes
Depends.
Or superheroes or
Fantastic
Most
Four? Because they
are
have
heroes.
They have crap loads of money.
Well, and also they're a government group.
Yeah,
you know the well, not government group, but they're government.
They're
affiliated.
Yes.
Like the Avengers, an actual out and out government group. You know,
oh, really?
But most of these government groups do not have mutants in them. Or have a few mutants that, you know, they're not really talked about. You
right,
know?
The X-Men, unlicensed, and therefore they work under the radar. And that's why Professor Xavier has a school for the gifted, not, you know.
School for mutants.
Hey, we're training mutants here.
But, I mean, I get your point. To get back to the actual point, if you have the ability mm-hmm. to stop someone from being mugged, and you rough up the mugger... That's what you're asking? Is that, do you have the moral imperative
well,
to do so?
Well, I did write down, does, quote, great power give them great responsibility? Do they have the right to go and save and essentially be a police officer
well,
just because you have a superpower?
Now you have to talk about the difference between legal right and moral right.
Right.
But it's also generally not
well, let's
just
talk about
the difference between them and a police officer. A police officer is held by a certain amount of strictures. When you're in vigilantism, it's your own strictures that are restrained.
That's what I mean.
There's
is that
three
we,
categories I want to throw out. I'm sorry.
What I was just saying is that, you know, that's part of the problem is that one of the reasons why we give guns to certain people in the United States and allow them certain abilities.
Inalienable rights.
To go out and arrest people, to, you know, subdue mm-hmm. people, handcuff people, is because they have to work... They have to work underneath certain guidelines. They have yes. rules. But a superhero who is not deputized, even though he might be like Superman, where he's decided not to push, you know, put his fist through somebody's face, he doesn't have any guidelines. Like, we haven't set a rule for the superhero to fall under.
Well,
so we're just trusting Superman not to go all...
In the United States, we have something called a citizen's arrest, which means...
That's true.
Any citizen, conceivably, could go out, rough up a mugger, and arrest him.
Now, the thing is, if Superman has a secret
a
identity...
martial artist.
And therefore, that we don't know who he is, you know, he doesn't... I mean, I would assume if you make a citizen's arrest, you have to say, I'm a citizen of this county, I have to all these things. So Superman, if he makes a citizen's arrest, would have to admit that he was Clark Kent, et cetera, et cetera.
Clark Kent is a secret identity. He's really Superman.
Mm.
I want to propose that there are three different type of vigilantes here.
Okay.
So one, you have the Batman archetype.
Yeah, because I want to bring up him because I couldn't figure him out.
Well, he's the first of the archetypal vigilantes.
Called by the police every
week. Yeah, he's called
week.
By the police every time. I mean,
but so is Sherlock Holmes.
Why didn't they just give him a freaking badge?
That's only the Silver Age. That's only the Silver Age Batman. As we move into the modern age, he has allies within the police department. He's not an extension of
the But he also has enemies within the police department, too, and the government.
What's the guy's name? Lubbock? Or
Bullock. Jim J. Bullock.
No,
I just wanted
not.
To see if you'd catch
I
that.
I was like, what? Oh, that Batman. God.
I'd love to see them cast Jim J. Bullock as Sergeant Bullock. That would rock.
Batman, it's so
okay,
great.
So you have Batman as the vigilante that doesn't kill,
mm-hmm.
right? Within, he is working by his own moral code.
Right.
And works to some degree within the basic laws of society.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't break in and entering. He does some, but he doesn't say do forgery. He doesn't plant evidence on people, you know.
But he does cross lines that we would consider illegal for a police officer to do.
Yes.
In thinking about Batman, I did some research on Bernard Goetz.
Well, hold on. Let me wrap up the three types. The second type is the Punisher archetype.
Right.
Okay.
Who's totally just...
Who will kill your ass. He is the classic sense of vigilante.
Right.
Okay.
He's also judging as well as...
Yeah. Judge, jury, and executioner all in one van ready to go.
Right.
And I'm going to put out there a third archetype that's less popular and less pervasive in comic books, the cloak and dagger archetype, which they don't really do violence. They don't really... They're
cloak
not really
violence. Cloak
no,
sucks
they
people
don't.
Under the cloak and
what they do is they forcibly rehabilitate. What they did was they were anti-drug superheroes, right?
Right.
One had the ability to burn the drugs out of your system, just burn it right out if you were cooperative. Painful, short-lived. The other one had the ability to freeze the drugs out of your system by putting you through a psychic hell by sucking you into his cloak.
Okay.
Oh, okay, cool. I get it.
Okay. But, again, both of them are vigilantes in the classic sense, but they're
inflicting
it.
Did Nancy Reagan write that series or what?
Yes.
It was the 80s. It was the 80s anti-drug culture.
Interesting.
You know? But they're preserving laws, different way than Batman, different way than... but they're often forcing justice on nonviolent criminals.
Right.
Interesting.
So that's the other kind of turnaround on that.
Right. Now, the thing with the Bernie Goetz thing was that he was acquitted of almost every single case except for the fact that he had an unregistered firearm.
Right. So this is the guy
this
that
is the
in
guy
the 80s.
Who, in the 80s who actually shot four people who were
trying to
mug.
He was mugged by people using screwdrivers on a subway.
Right.
He pulled a gun on them and shot them.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Absolutely. That was the one case that was recorded. I actually didn't realize that he had had two other cases where he was the subway vigilante and had been pulling guns on people. As a deterrent.
A la Charles Bronson.
Right, but he didn't become a full vigilante until he actually pulled the trigger.
Right.
Because they said, you know, that the actual deterrent could have been, you just wave the gun, they'll go away.
Right, that's what they tried to get him on, is sue him back, saying, all you had to do is, you know, you didn't have to shoot my son, you just had to wave it in front of him.
Right. One of the most interesting things about this was I looked at the guys who he shot and did a little research on them, and... It sort of brings up the superhero, supervillain aspect, is that if we don't do this, who will take care of people who are stepping so far outside of what we consider a safe and good society? I mean, all four of these guys, except for I think one didn't recover, went and committed crimes again. In fact, one became a serial rapist and killed a 19-year-old.
Really? I didn't hear that.
So, I mean, all of them went back and really, really became violent offenders.
I know, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if he had a cape, if Bernard Goetz had a cape, then what would we say?
Right.
Is he Batman or is he a crazy nut job?
See, I have to fall on the vigilante side purely in this debate. I know to be the good bleeding heart liberal I'm supposed to be. I'm supposed to be like, no, let him go.
But you're all for Batman running around.
I'm saying, shoot the fuckers dead. You catch someone trying to rape a woman, neuter him.
But
you know?
Here's the line. When you come to then... There's a difference between capturing and bringing somebody to a judge and letting that half of our legal... There's two parts of our legal system here. Mm-hmm. One is finding the people and arresting them and protecting. And the other half is dealing with them afterwards. If you go as far as making the rash snap decisions, then there are gray areas. Yes. When you pull the guy off the woman and his pants are down, case closed. That's very obvious.
But sometimes if it makes it to the legal system, no. It does not. There are loopholes. There are ways out of it.
And that's a problem.
At that point, vigilantes may have it right. You know, I hate to put it in quite those terms. I don't want to encourage any of our listeners to go buy a screwdriver and
I mean, and the
start
thing
swinging
is,
from rooftops.
You know, I'm pretty much a bleeding heart liberal too. But you know, when it comes to people like Jeffrey Dahmer, I'm like, sorry, you out of the gene pool.
Yeah. Well, that was never really a factor with Jeffrey Dahmer, was it?
Exactly.
But
I mean, it, at some point, people are so sick that I mean, I'm generally against the death penalty. There are too many mistakes.
But this is a separate issue. This is a separate issue. Because yes, we all agree that those people need to be out of here, and our better court system is, you know, we need to find a better way of dealing with those people. And yes, they should be off this planet. But are we going to condone people running around with capes who just happen to have batarangs to go and do that for us, or do they need to have rules? Just like a police officer.
I'm going
to
contradict myself here.
You could have your own show where you just argue with yourself.
I'm going to debate myself for a little while. You guys just go get some lunch. I'll do this. okay, on the one side, yeah, you pull the rapist off the woman, you know, put the rapist down, right?
Right.
But by the same token, if you run into a room and you assess the situation by what you see, right?
Mm-hmm.
And act immediately, there's so much room for mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and without the due process, I fear that maybe the Punisher type vigilante may make just as many mistakes as our legal system.
What about Batman running into the bar and roughing up, you know, the snitch so he can get the information so that he can find, you know, the warehouse of the Kingpin?
Well, it works for Jack Bauer.
Yeah, that's true. what you were going to bring up, Peter.
You were talking, this is Peter talking to Aaron. Aaron was talking the other day about how in 24... the main character is constantly torturing people to get information.
Every episode.
And a question of, you know, we now have this thing going on where, you know, President Bush is saying, you know, I want mm-hmm. the permission or the ability to be able to torture people. I think it's okay to torture people. And people are saying, you know, no, that's not okay. It's mm-hmm. never okay. And
until you watch 24 and you're like, go, Jack.
Right.
You've got to shoot him in the leg and then squeeze the wound, you know.
Right. Now, otherwise, you're not going to get the information.
What I find interesting about this is that now when we think of Golden Age comic books, mm-hmm. we think of these happy, glorious times.
Right.
When we think of Silver Age comic books, they're still very, very clean. But torture still exists in the Silver Age.
Okay.
Batman and Spider-Man both regularly dangle people off the edge of buildings and ask them for information.
Right.
You know, I think it's generally accepted that that's okay, well, as long as they're bad men.
But here we are. You know, bad mouthing people in our government, mm-hmm. at least us crazy liberals over here, about how so insane someone would have to be to bring up that there are cases in which you need to cross the line in interrogation. And we all say only a madman would do that. And yet we'll read the comic books, we'll go to the movies, we'll watch 24 and say, here is an exact moment where you need a man or a woman or whatever. You need somebody to step up to the plate and do what's really right and shoot the guy in the kneecap, twist the kneecap off until he screams, or take his kid and hold the gun to his kid and saying, even if he's pretending, say, I'm going to kill your son, like Jack Bauer.
I'm going to throw this out here and be the unpopular one in this conversation. I would say, if you know that this person is involved, right? Mm-hmm. This is not a matter of investigation. You know this person is involved.
Okay.
You know this person has information. You know the information is time sensitive. Real world or comic book. It is okay to torture
them.
I
disagree. You're ready to agree with Bush saying that the laws we have are antiquated and that we need to make some torture adjustment rules.
This would be my differentiation on Bush. Each case, mm-hmm. each specific individual case needs to be dealt with on a very specific basis.
And who makes those choices?
Not this highly institutionalized. Everyone at this prison will be tortured if they end up in this prison.
Well, obviously, but I think that's what they're bringing up. They're obviously not saying we can torture anybody we want to. They're saying there are some cases that we need to get some serious information out of some people, and we know that they've got it.
But in order to do that, because they're the government, they have to institutionalize it. They have to have a law saying they can do it.
They have
laws in place that say they can do it, which is institutionalizing torture.
Institutionalizing means... Everyone in this circumstance, like right now, what we have right now are cab drivers being tortured because they were in the wrong place in the wrong time.
Yeah, except for the
along with legitimate people.
Yeah, except for the one terrorist who's in the
group. What you're saying is that you want somebody to be sane enough to make those choices.
I suspect you mm-hmm. of having planted a nuclear bomb
mm-hmm.
and it's going off in an hour, that's not sufficient in reason for me to torture you.
Okay.
I'm saying if I suspect that you've planted a nuclear bomb, it's going off in an hour, and there's nuclear residue and you're radioactive, yes.
Okay.
I have the right to torture you.
The problem is it's never that black and white.
No.
That's what I'm saying is if it is that there are going to be cases where it is that black and white. Those cases, it's okay. Any other shade of gray is not sufficient cause for torture.
I wish.
I
well, just refute it.
Well, I just don't believe we live in that world. I don't believe we live in a world that is that any case of, you know, you have a Palestinian militant who says, I threw a rock at someone.
But if you have him on videotape.
Well, fine. I threw a rock at someone. I ran back in my house. My brother, who's, you know, a severe militant, he had a gun, and I took it away from him. And that's when the American soldiers came in the door, and they said, all right, you've been shooting people, and he knows, you know, but my brother's dead now, and he knows where the bomb is. That, you know, there are 8 million in one circumstance.
And by the code we've just put out, that is not sufficient.
How many judges and paperwork would you need to go through in order to clear the torture to be...
Well, look,
we have precedent for retroactive clearance. No, we do.
It's never going to be that clear.
Let me actually say that in a weird way, we already have the right to torture. Okay, in a weird way. See, I think that we have a legal checks and balances system for a reason. Okay, there are certain things that checks and balances are there to keep us from overstepping our bounds, to keep us from doing things that are wrong, because the system recognizes that we as human beings are fallible, and especially when we have power, we make very big mistakes.
Right.
We do awful things. Okay.
So where is the...
So our right to torture is the moral right to torture, recognizing the legal consequences.
Right.
See,
yes.
I think someone should have the right to torture someone. I think they do have the right to torture someone if they believe it's going to do great good. But I think even if they do that, they still got to pay the price.
Right. And also recognizing that within the world of comic books, we're talking about icons of our society. We're talking about specific – these are the people who I would like to behave like. I would like to be this good, to try this much, to put my world to right. So if we are trying and striving to be that good, then yes, you have the right to step this much out of the line.
But some of these people aren't good.
Exactly.
Like Jack Bowers and Batman.
Exactly. And I think Jack Bauer is a little – he's not real, but he's a little closer to real than makes me comfortable.
Something I would have loved to have seen at some point would be a Batman comic where, you know, he does the standard shakedown routine, you know, roughs up somebody and finds out it was the wrong person. You know?
Yeah.
I've never seen a comic book.
That's happened in 24.
Oh, has it?
He's tortured people and then found out he was wrong.
That's great.
Which is...
That'd be interesting to watch.
Which has also affected the other people. That would be fun to watch. Now, here's... So let me submit something.
That's great, because now you've got a not black and white... I mean, it's now gray, and they're responsibly dealing with the fact that he does that.
Yeah. I mean, let me submit something maybe we're all kind of agreeing about, is that we all agree that that should be institutionally wrong to do these type of things. But that we secretly hope and that we know that every once in a while there might be somebody out there in our heroes, in our television shows, and maybe in reality who might step over the line
in
order to get it done.
Which is why we're shipping them out. Which is why we realize...
Well, that's the thing. For most things, for most information, torture has been proven to be ineffective. You know, it's the only type of information that torture is effective in getting is information that is immediately necessary and immediately verifiable.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only things that it's ever useful for. More long-term information, incredibly unreliable.
Yeah, because they'll say anything you want them to say eventually.
But the nuclear bomb going off in an hour?
That's immediately verifiable. I think we all hope that there's a nuclear bomb going off in an hour. They will torture the motherfucker.
If it's in Los Angeles,
So what do you think? So do you think superheroes will be able to survive? Just closing this up. Superheroes will be able to survive in our world?
Well, hold on. I mean, we have some other... No, I mean, like Wonder Woman's lasso of truth.
Mm-hmm.
She throws it around you. You must answer any question put to you. Does she have the right to do that?
But that's not torture.
Should she work for the IRS asking you if you know about that $28 million bonus you forgot to put on your income tax return last year?
See, that might be violating somebody's rights to, using a device to force. It's like truth serum.
Yeah.
Can a cop just go tackle somebody to the ground, inject them with truth serum, and force them to answer any question?
You know, does Wonder Woman violate the right to privacy?
Only if it's to cause, to stop further harm of a big level. You know.
Okay, so the Cloak and Dagger group, right? Where they assault random junkies on the street and forcibly rehabilitate them. Is that morally or ethically wrong? They're forcibly changing them. they're forcibly altering a life choice they have made, or a life choice. You know, these are not necessarily people who are going to them and saying, please help me get off the smack.
Yeah, what if one of them decides they're going to go all super religious and start forcing people to, you know, and stop drinking wine and beer?
Yeah, start attacking frat parties.
Yeah. I've never heard of that. I mean, the anti-drug duo, team duo running around detoxing people sounds like a lame...
Well, actually, the Punisher was part of that.
Yeah.
The Punisher, like most of his enemies were Colombian drug lords.
Well, that's different than going around and, you know, forcibly detoxing people.
Cloak and Dagger went after the drug lords, but forcibly detoxed people along the way.
After episode 5, what do you do?
There was a guy, I think his name was Sable. If I remember correctly.
That was a woman.
No, well, there was a guy, and I can't remember his name, but
Nova?
No. Give me a second. I'll give you a little more information.
Take a drink.
And you'll be able to jump on it. There was this guy who was great. He lived in Africa, and his family was murdered. And so he took the ashes from their murder, and he would always put a design on his face before he went, you know, with the ashes, before he went out after criminals. Different. He was really cool.
He only had about 35 criminals before he ran
with the ashes.
You know?
He
was licking his fingers.
No.
He's down at the bottom of the barrel.
They burned his house, so he had a house worth of ashes.
Oh.
But it was his...
That's a lot of ashes.
But it was also the house of... It was his wife and kids' ashes at the same time, so it was kind of like this sort of weird kind of psychological thing.
Damn, but he was out. Maybe I should go and burn my cousin Larry. I hate that son of a bitch.
Lastly, in The Incredibles, remember they're all the superheroes are sued, and eventually, you know, they stop being supers because there's too many lawsuits.
Actually, years before The Incredibles came out, a guy that I work with made a short film about 20 minutes long. And he was trying to make a feature out about this guy, Super Guy. He was essentially Superman. And the deal was that this guy went around and started saving everybody. And pretty soon, he couldn't get to the people fast enough. And so the government set up a hotline that you could call in and they could just cell phone him. And he would try to fly, you know. And so pretty soon it was just nonstop ringing. He was flying everywhere. And then it started to become cool to get saved by him. So people were just throwing themselves off buildings to try to get him to save. And finally... He misses one of them. Someone throws himself off a building, and he can't get there because there's so many phone calls. So they sue him. And pretty soon the entire world starts turning against him because it's like, you can't just run around and do all this stuff, you know? And he then disappears. And the end of his, the whole point is, wow, our superhero's gone. I guess we need to take care of ourselves and stop being ridiculous.
The real life thing about this is something Matt already brought up was the Bernard Goetz story, where when that happened in New York, I'm not sure what it was like outside of New York because I was living in New York State at the time. In New York State, there was not the polarity that the some of the press was portraying.
It was
pretty much everybody was on Bernard Goetz's side.
Not outside of New York. I think it was very split outside of New York.
Yeah.
Well, in New York City at the time, people were feeling very unsafe.
Yeah.
The subways were hell at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, it was terrifying to go on the subways.
Mm-hmm.
And when this guy fought back and shot down 4 kids that were trying to mug him on the subway, he became a hero in that city.
Well, they remember several years later, there was the old lady who carried the pistol in her pocketbook, and somebody came up to her and she shot him.
I don't remember.
And
that.
Yeah, it was the same exact type of deal. And, you know, again, it was split. You know, does somebody have the right to, you know, to do that type of stuff?
It's funny because, like, right now when I lived in New York, when I lived there full time, New York had become pretty safe under Mayor Giuliani. The subways were cleaned up. You know, there wasn't as much mugging going on anymore anywhere in the city.
Universal fascism.
Woo.
Disneyfied.
Well, that's the question. Like, you know, yeah, he was a fascist.
No, he was a complete fascist.
Picked up homeless people, forcibly put them on buses, and drove them up to Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
And dropped them off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I would consider that a bad thing. But
he was a universal fascist. So, I mean, and in some way he stripped New York of fireworks specifically because John Gotti every year had a July 4th huge thing. And under the guise of, hey, come to my party, he would hand out money
to all of his supporters. And so he took that party away from him, saying, you have no reason to do it because you have no fireworks.
Right.
But, you know, also there was no Chinatown fireworks. There's nothing else. So, you know, hey,
it well, worked. He should have been wearing a cape because he would have gotten away with it. All right, since we've now strayed off topic completely, we should wrap up with, before we get away from Christmas season too much, I want to just hear what you guys got as geek gifts.
Excellent.
Before we all forget, essentially.
Donnie?
I got Ticket to Ride from Aaron.
And we played Ticket to Ride.
And it was fun. I liked it.
It's a good game.
I liked it.
It's. I can see it being better.
It's a board game.
It's a board game, yeah. It'd be better with more than two people.
Yeah, definitely. But this was a completely non-geek Christmas for me.
My big present
was an air purifier.
That's a gadget. Okay, well, I got a couple books that are very geeky. My wife got me The Physics of Superheroes, which, by the way, is a great looking book. I haven't read the whole thing.
I just spent 5 minutes flipping through this book, and I love it.
Yeah.
I love this book.
It goes through, you know, flying, leaping in a single bound, the whole, you know, can giants exist, like how big they Don just stole my book.
Did not.
But it goes through all that type of stuff, and really, it's very well done, and it's funny. It's like, it's written very funny, and I also got
Chapter 2 is the death of Gwen Stacy and the physics of falling and being caught by Spider-Man's webbing.
I hate the whole Superman flying up the building, the girl falling down the building, and somehow his
you
arm...
You got me! Who's got you?
Yeah, well, but the reason why she doesn't explode onto his arms instead of the sidewalk, you know.
Lois Lane splashes.
Anyway, it's all in that book, and I can't wait to read that.
Excellent.
The Physics of Superheroes by James Kakalios.
I also got the first three Star Wars movies, meaning New Hope, Empire Strikes Back.
Untouched.
And, the scripts that are annotated. And it's very cool.
Really?
Why did you get those?
What sort of annotations do they have?
Well, it talks about...
Oh, wait, no. You got episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Yes, 4, 5, and 6.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. I thought you said 1, 2, and 3.
New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi.
Got it, yes.
I was like, what's your problem, man?
it's like he was going to cut you.
But the guy has obviously at least gotten a hold of some of the original drafts, or at least have talked to people who've read the original drafts, because he talks a lot about what was originally planned in certain parts of the script.
Han Solo was originally a green alien.
Greedo.
I am so stealing all of your books.
It's very cool. In fact, you know, they have some of the original names that are complete, and some of the story is completely different. Some of the original idea.
Really? Yeah.
And some of the stuff is in the first movies, or the
first
movie episode 1, 2, and 3. He actually put some of the names and stuff that he thought about originally, like Anakin was the hero. In originally, they actually had
Luke
that name.
Didn't fit the name Luke. Like everyone else has these kind of fantastic
Han,
names.
Leia.
And Luke.
Well,
Luke.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Actually, I think Anakin and Skywalker were two separate people in the original. It wasn't the same thing. Anyway, it's very interesting. I've already started
George,
that.
And, back when you had obstacles and things to prove.
Yeah. Anyway, that's pretty. And I got my Xbox 360, and I got some video games. But those are the interesting
Yay.
Ones.
Peter?
Actually, my presents really didn't arrive this Christmas. But no, they're all on the way. They just haven't arrived. I got an Xbox 360.
Yay. Congrats.
But I didn't.
Same with me. You know, hey. Yeah.
You spiritually have
it. It wasn't under the tree, Mr. Gates.
Yeah.
He's lucky that we got him.
Come on, hit him with it, Aaron. Come on, give him the line, Aaron.
Now that I've seen the games for it that you have, oh my God, they're great.
That's nothing. Yeah. There's going to be some really great ones coming
up. I'm sure there are. And then I have a video camera coming down the pike at some point.
Cool.
So. And it shoots 24 frames a second, so it looks very filmic. So I'm very excited.
Shake. I had a very gadgety, lovely Christmas. So I got my Panasonic Lumix awesome camera,
which you brought up on the last episode.
I brought up on the show, and I got it, man.
Which we should mention at Aaron's New Year's party that Matt was uncharacteristically unsocial.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was taking pictures.
I was just taking pictures the whole time.
Right. He was stalking everyone.
Yeah. Oh, it was great.
And you were dressed like Peter Parker.
Yeah.
You had the jacket and the camera. It was totally bizarre looking.
I was feeling very Spider-Man. I got the annotated Sherlock Holmes.
Ah, that's great.
Which is fantastic. I got a digital recorder, an iTalk.
Oh.
Which is schmancy pants, and so now I can sit in my car when I have script ideas and not have to stop and almost kill people to write down my ideas.
Yeah, I have one of those. It's great.
Oh, I totally need one of those. I never heard of that.
It's fantastic. And then I got a Sony portable DVD player.
Yay.
Which is ooh, so good.
But you got what?
I got a Sony portable DVD player.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
With a little flip-top screen?
Yep.
Oh, very cool.
Strong Medicine gave it as our closing gift for being on the show.
Yeah, that's good. They're really nice. Coming down in price. Remember they were $1,000.
Yeah,
like now you can get them for like $200.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Oh, and a kneeling chair.
Yeah, he got one of those '80s chairs where you sit on your knees. Remember those things that were really big in the '80s and then they disappeared forever? Apparently,
yeah, I remember the ergonomic '70s. Yeah.
The last
chair.
One was given to Matt.
Oh, that's nice.
Can I tell you what I think the next biggest gift is going to be, a la the iPod? Okay,
penis.
Exactly. You know, everyone needs one. No. At some point, it's going to be the iPicture frame. Okay? They have them now.
Yeah, they're expensive.
But they're so expensive right
but
now.
But they're very expensive, and they're very tiny. You know?
Yeah.
When they can do a, like something bigger, like right now they say, here's a 3x5 picture frame, and then you look at it carefully, and it's actually the viewable image of it is 2x3.
Yeah.
You know, it's extremely tiny.
I've seen them 7x9 at Brookstone.
They have them bigger, but they tend to be much more expensive. When they get to 100,
so pricey.
When it's 7x9 for $100 or $200, more like $150.
7x9, you need it hanging up on your wall. If you're going to buy something like that, you need it hanging up on your wall.
Yeah.
And it needs to be wireless, so you can,
they are wireless.
Yes. Yes, but yeah, preferably it would be 8x10, but
yeah.
But when they have that, that's going to be huge. Yeah.
Doesn't Bill Gates has a thing in his house where he has the artwork in his house and the walls they change color and the artwork changes depending on the person.
I've
who
seen
walks
a bar that
just
was like
the artwork or the entire wall.
I don't know. I know the artwork changes.
All right, real quickly.
Wow.
Yeah, he's rich.
Yeah, well,
I have some mail keep giving too, if you guys want.
That's messed up.
Let's do a couple. Let's do some mail real quick and wrap
this up.
Yeah, the hour and a half episode again.
We're not 2 hours. Very quickly, a couple of ones. One's from Angela Lackey. I got two mails from two girl geeks in reference to our dating episode. She'll be brief. She wanted to tell us no, her name was Angela. She's a hot geek. She's a gamer geek. She's a Star Wars geek. She's a Star Trek geek. And she's a Renfest geek and a theater geek. All of that and hot. She wanted to just agree that as a girl geek, it's much easier to get a date. She's often grateful that she happened to be born a girl, an attractive girl, seeing as otherwise her interest would find her in a parent's basement. It's also easier for women geeks because most men are geeks in one way or another. I really think the women geeks have an easier time overall. I just got married to a fellow geek, and we're looking forward to having many geeklings.
Oh, she's married. Sorry, guys.
By the way, I've been on our Frapper site, just checking out where people are, and there's... there's some cute girl geeks.
I know.
I've been saying we have impressed. A very attractive geek base.
Did you get Megan's?
Yes. You do it.
She also had a comment on our dating episode. In your most recent episode, you said that you wished that you had the female side of things of geek dating, and here's her 10 cents.
Ooh.
I do not have trouble getting geeky guys to date me. In fact, most guys are rather delighted when they discover my geeky side. I am, frankly, tired of the male geek stereotype. There are a lot of hot geeks out there, and altogether cool, too. I think that the thing about being yourself is really wise as well. I like being able to enthuse about things with people, such as fandom, RPGs. So go ahead, comment on something. Anyway, she goes on. She's essentially saying, she can find a guy that likes all these geeky things. She totally digs them, but they don't all have to be, goofy looking, that the geek stereotype is wrong.
Why, I find that an insult.
I do have problems with non-geeks, though. Once they discover my odd obsession with Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, role-playing games, manga, and the like, they usually back away slowly, hands raised. Ah, well,
dating outside one species is always hard. Anyway, excellent. That was Megan.
Excellent. That's it for me.
We just got this one today by a guy named Kevin. After listening to your show from 12-12-05, I have to say that I wholeheartedly agree that the Serenity / Firefly sequel absolutely must include Christina Hendricks as Saffron Yolanda Bridget or Yo Saffbridge. I also am listening to your show for a few months now and finally understand all the teasing of Aaron. Dude, I can't believe she's your sister. She's totally hot. See, I get this crap all the time now.
Did she listen to our show?
I don't know.
No, her computer was stolen. She actually doesn't have a computer. She got taken from her. Like,
oh, that sucks.
So anyway, that's it.
One of our geeklings probably has it.
Yeah. So, that's it for this week.
Excellent.
I hope you guys have a good geek week coming up.
Back on the bandwagon.
Exactly. And our new year, 2006.
Triumphant Return in 2006.
That's right. We're almost on our birthday. So,
the
goodbye,
year
everybody.
Of the geek.
Bye.
Goodbye,
geeklings.
Rock it out.